Anthony Edwards is my favorite player in the NBA. Anthony Edwards seeking attention? I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock.
I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Mike here, Sports and the Real Podcast, coming at you once again. As always, appreciate everybody joining me, checking me out for a couple minutes, listening, watching, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, as always, thanks for checking me out. Welcome if you're new here. If you're returning, welcome back. Hang out for a while, check out other videos, and, you know, get to know me a little bit. But if you're new here, this is Sports and the Real Shit is the name of the podcast, right? I want to talk about sports, and I want to talk about other topics that are more important. Typically, that's going to be around things to make us better as individuals, as family men, if you have a family, but as men, mostly men is my audience. Of course, I'm sure I have women in my audience as well. But just better people, right? Growing in our careers, personal development, mentally, physically, all that good stuff. That's what I want for us, right? Is you're not just here to, you know, talk about sports or yap about sports, which is fun and great, but to grow as people. Sometimes part of that growth requires some topics and conversations that may be a little bit uncomfortable for people. And I don't mind having uncomfortable conversations, right? A lot of this is by myself, obviously, on this podcast, but with other people as well. I don't mind having uncomfortable, respectful, uncomfortable conversations. That's how you grow. That's how you learn. If you only have conversations, you know, about the things you agree with that everybody else or that you know agree with, then, you know, you're not growing. So I hope that even if you don't totally agree with what I say on this podcast, you understand my perspective of where I'm coming from. And, you know, if you leave a comment, we can have respectful dialogue, you know, or whatever the case may be. But some of the conversation can be uncomfortable. And that leads me to starting off this podcast episode, not really where I wanted, where I was planning to go. I wasn't planning to go here when I, you know, was writing up this podcast episode, right? But I have to go here. A couple items that I feel like is near to me, and if I, you know, if I don't touch on it, I feel like, you know, I'm fronting to myself if I don't touch on it. So let's start here. So as some of you may know, some of you, you know, a lot of you probably don't know, I am Haitian American. And in the news recently has been some ridiculous stuff said about Haitians and Haitian, you know, immigrants, you know, they're being called illegal immigrants, you know, across the country. And you know, they're being labeled and tagged as doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, the most recent event, right? And I try to stay out of politics as much as possible, because to me, politics is like a game that the average person is never going to win, right? Politics and these laws are created really for rich people, right? Because none of the stuff that they do is really with us in mind, right? We're just like a bystander, right? So we may get some of the benefits, but the benefits are truly, you know, somehow it's more for rich people, regardless of how they try to spin it. That's just my viewpoint on it. So we're the average folk is left with the crumbs in my mind when it comes to political conversations. So I try to stay as far away from political conversations as possible, because a lot of it is, frankly, a waste of time for people at my tax bracket. Maybe when I get up there one day, I might change my mind. Get out and vote. I'm not telling you not to vote. I'm not going to be irresponsible and say don't vote. Vote. Exercise your vote and what's best for your interests. But for the most part, a lot of the talk in politics is, you know, is nonsense, right? At least at the federal level. Now, the local level, totally different story. But anyway, enough of that, right? So I try to stay away from politics. But recently, you know, Haitians made the news, and I couldn't keep my mouth shut, you know, and not say anything as a Haitian American, right, about what's going on. Most recently, you know, it was on the presidential debate the other night, and basically what they're saying, you know, what's hitting social media and, you know, gone viral now is that supposedly, you know, there's these Haitian illegal immigrants and, you know, across the country, the specific examples were in Springfield, Ohio, who are going around eating people's pets. They're eating their cats. They're eating their dogs. Another story you're talking about, Haitians are eating people's geese and, you know, just going around and picking up geese and cutting off their necks and eating them and all kinds of wild stories about Haitians. And social media is ablaze where the racist folks are all out talking about, yeah, the Haitians, you know, are coming in, they're doing this and doing X, Y, Z. And then, of course, you have the defender saying, no, that's not Haitians. And, you know, all of it, first of all, is a lie, right? As I read up on it, I didn't have to read up on it to know that it was a lie. But as I read up on it, essentially the town of Springfield, Ohio, there has been a large influx of Haitian immigrants. And these are legal immigrants who have come here under the Biden, you know, program recently in the last couple years, 3-4 years. But these people are here legally. And apparently there's a lot of jobs in the Midwest in towns like Springfield, Ohio. And what's happening is that there is not, you know, there's a lot of people coming in. There's an influx of these people coming in, and there's not really anywhere to put them. So the issue is not that these Haitians are, you know, causing tremendous problems with eating people's cats and dogs, right? The mayor of the city or whoever, right? The governor has said, like, that stuff is a lie. It's not true. It's not that the Haitians are coming in and doing all these things and acting up. It's the fact that it's just so many of them. But there's a whole bunch of jobs available, and they're doing these jobs, and they're doing these jobs well. But accommodations like houses and all that stuff is, you know, scarce. And you have a whole bunch of immigrants having to be acclimated to a certain area in, I don't know, Springfield, Ohio, but it's probably not used to a ton of Haitians being there. So they're probably having, you know, a reckoning of some sorts with a bunch of new people they're not familiar with, have accents. Many of them may not even speak English that well, right? It's not the best environment right now. So there may be some issues going on. Maybe, you know, housing prices may be going up. I don't know the in and out of all the details. But because of that, conservatives have used this, really Trump supporters have used this to go crazy on Haitians, and Haitians, you know, are eating the people's pets. Haitians eat cats, and Haitians are eating dogs. Haitians are eating the geese without cooking them. They're just chopping their heads off, eating them raw. Like all kinds of wild ass stories you're hearing online now. And it takes me back about 30 plus years ago, growing up, some of the same stuff was said about Haitians. So if you're younger, right, if you're a younger Haitian, you know, boy, girl, male, female, right, young adult, right, you may not be used to these conversations around Haitians. You're used to seeing Haitians, you know, the rappers and the athletes on TV and, you know, the press secretary. Like, if you're a younger Haitian in America, like, you're used to, you know, Haitians being in the spotlight for mostly, you know, celebrities, right? People know Haitian celebrities. They know the athletes, the NFL players, you know, some NBA players, you know. They're waving flags around, you know, Haitian Flag Day. They know that. They know the press secretary for the president. They know that, right? But those of us who grew up back in the day, 30 plus years ago in the United States, this rhetoric around Haitians eating cats and dogs, like, that stuff ain't new to us. So it don't bother us. It's not going to get under our skin. We're used to it, bro. And back then, it wasn't on social media where a bunch of faceless, nameless people and bots repeating the same stuff over and over. People on social media now who will never say any of this stuff in your face. Back then, it was classmates. 30 plus years ago, it was classmates. You were sitting in class in school, elementary, middle school, high school, with people picking on you because you were Haitian. And kids were saying stuff like, Haitians eat cats. Who knows where they got that from? Their parents. Haitians eat dogs. And Haitians did this. Haitians brought HIV. Back then, it was a whole bunch of stuff. They were saying Haitians started HIV back then, 30 plus years ago. So imagine sitting in class trying to focus and all the jokes on you because you're Haitian. You started HIV and AIDS. Haiti is where HIV and AIDS started. We heard it all already. All of these jokes are nothing new. So when I hear Donald Trump and all these people and his minions repeating this stuff, like, it doesn't get under my skin because we heard it already. Now, for the younger folks who aren't used to this rhetoric, it ain't nothing to get too upset over. It's just our turn in the political cycle, and in a couple months, it'll all be over. Back then, 30-plus years ago, you heard it for weeks and months and years on end. And young Haitian kids had to sit there and take it or fight or tell the parents, but most of the time their parents had just came to the States. Their parents weren't really going to do anything like that. So you had to handle it yourself, either ignore it, go into depression, keep your head down and get your work done in school, right? Like all these kids who have grown up to be engineers and doctors and architects and lawyers, like Haitian kids, like we overcame a whole bunch of crap in school with people bothering us. A lot of cats fought. A lot of cats fought every day. Some cats are probably sitting in jail still for retaliating for getting picked on in school. No doubt about it. So Haitians have gone through this before, man. So imagine nowadays, on top of them telling us, saying that Haitians are eating cats and dogs and people's pets and everything like that. On top of that, they're saying Haitians started COVID. Thank God they already put COVID on somebody else. they already put COVID on somebody else. They can't say Haitians started COVID. But back then they were saying, not on top of us eating all these things, they were saying we started AIDS. AIDS came from Haiti. So as a young Haitian person, you either fought every day or kept your head down or something. There was no way around it. And they were live and in person. And these kids were getting it from their parents. The ignorance wasn't just with the kids, it was from the parents. Like if you went with your parents to the store, you would observe grown adult American folks disrespecting Haitian people, saying some of the most meanest and rudest things. So if you experienced it back then, this stuff they're saying now is like, okay, well, I guess it's just our time again. Just like the Mexicans, every couple months, it's their time again to experience some BS. We just deal with it. Okay, it's our time, whatever, whatever. Hopefully there's nobody in your circle saying that BS. And that's the thing about nowadays. People are so comfortable saying things online, they would never say it in person. Bunch of bots and, you know, people hiding behind fake accounts, hiding behind burners. They'll never say that stuff in person because they know what'll happen if they do. So now that generation has passed, a couple of generations have passed where Haitians, you know, for the most part, you know, we know the Haitian celebrities. We know the NFL players, you know, from Haiti or of Haitian heritage. We know those guys, and they're pretty damn good football players. We know the guys of Haitian heritage who played in the NBA. We know the actors and actresses. We know Garcelle. We know these people of Haitian heritage on TV, comedians, you know, making people laugh. You see the TikToks making people laugh. You see Karine, the press secretary, like taking answers, taking questions. But back then we didn't have any of that. But there was no representation. There was nobody to support us. 30 years ago, there was nobody saying, hey man, don't pick on these guys. We had to fend for ourselves one way or another. One way or another, you had to deal with being Haitian on your own. You figured it out. You either boxed every day, fought every day, got your retaliation somehow every day. And I know people, and I say every day, I mean every day. I know people who fought every day, literally every day. Got suspended, get expelled, come back, and same old thing every day. Or somehow you made friends. You kept your head down, you got your work done, and you overcame that stuff. But some people I'm sure were depressed through it all. People living in South Florida and in Central Florida, Orlando area, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, that junk wasn't sweet. People up north, Boston, New York, that junk wasn't sweet. And I've talked about this before in this podcast. And it wasn't it wasn't always white folks doing it either. That was the hurtful thing. So we overcame. So this stuff here is nothing. If you're a youngster, you haven't experienced this before, it'll pass. Like I said, a couple months from now, election's over, ain't nobody gonna be talking about it. But that's how it was. And we just got over it. Thankfully, thank God our parents didn't have the money, weren't able to afford to buy us AR-15s for our birthdays. Or else some of us might have done some things that other folks have done. If you get what I mean. Thankfully, our parents went on that tip. If you know what I'm saying. But it's crazy because a lot of these people who talk about Haitians and immigrants and things like that, right? These are the same people who go on mission trips to Haiti. So they'll sit there behind their screen and say, hey, you know, these Haitians, you know, they're this and that, and they're dirty people, and they have these diseases, and they're destroying our country. And these are the same Christian folks, who are going to Haiti on mission trips. I don't get that, right? So they do all these things, you know, they're going to, it's like a vacation for them. They're going to visit Haiti. They're not there to help in any way, to truly help. So they're going on these mission trips to Haiti and all these other countries where they don't like the immigrants, and these immigrants, they don't want them, you know, in their country. They're dirty, this and that, but they want to go to this. No, you don't really want to go help. You're just going on a vacation, man. You're on a paid vacation by your church. Then you got a nerve to sit there and claim yourself to be a Christian, you know, Christian, and Jesus is saying, when I was clothed and I was when I was naked, you clothed me. When I was homeless, you know, you didn't shelter me, all these things and that. Like, not only are you not clothing the homeless, the person with no clothes on, you're not sheltering the homeless, you're not providing food, but you're also saying, hey man, you're stealing my pets and you're eating it. So you're not providing Jesus any food at all, Christian. You're not providing Jesus food. Instead, you're telling Jesus, hey man, you're actually stealing my cat and my dog to eat it. You're lying on Jesus. You're making up lies on Jesus, like you're lying on these Haitian immigrants. They're not illegal immigrants, from what I'm hearing. They're here legally under the Biden program. But they're being called illegal, and they're being lumped in with the other illegal immigrants coming across the border, only to push a narrative. So for those of us who've been here a long time, it's okay. We've heard it before, and it was worse then. It's funny and crazy hearing it now from the mouth of somebody who's trying to run for president, no doubt about it. But he's a lunatic anyway, so he'll say anything for votes. Now, what's crazy is that some of our parents, some of our older parents and grandparents will still vote for this clown regardless of what he says about Haitians. Now, that right there is a whole different problem. Is illegal immigration a problem? Sure it is. That we got to get a hold of. But if people do their homework and research, not just about Haitians, but illegal, like, people, man, people don't understand why people immigrate to other countries. Nobody wants to leave their home country and come to a country that don't speak the language they speak, come to a country where they're getting embarrassed every day, where they're treated like worse than human feces. Nobody wants to do that willfully, man. People are leaving Haiti, and they're leaving Venezuela, and they're leaving all these countries because these countries have been overrun by corrupt governments. And a lot of times, these corrupt governments are sponsored by the U.S. They're backed by the U.S. So if you want Haitians to go back to Haiti and fix the country, and you want Venezuelans and Mexicans, like, tell the U.S. to take their foot off of people's necks, man. tell the U.S. to back out of Haitian politics, and Canada and the West of the Western Europe to back out of Haitian politics. So it's not that Haiti can't run itself and the Haitians can't run themselves. The people have to leave because for a country that's supposed to be the poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, there's hell of a lot of guns there. Who's providing the guns to the people on the streets? Who's backing these corrupt governments and these corrupt movements? So nobody signs up and says one day they just want to pick up and go and so they can go have their dignity taken away from them, man. Nobody wants to leave their country where one day they may be middle class, maybe slightly lower class, to another day they're like worse than lower class and they're working their ass off for pennies on the dollar in the United States and being yelled at and taken advantage of and being made fun of. Nobody signs up for that willfully. So before you make fun of these immigrants, whether illegal or not, ask yourself, why would someone willfully do that? What would cause someone to get up out of the comfort of their home, where they're, you know, somewhat living an okay life, supposedly, to come here? It's because they're not living an okay life. It's because things are so bad there that they'd rather get embarrassed. They'd rather run the risk of getting embarrassed than to stay where they are. Why? Because there are factors at play that are keeping countries like Haiti from progressing into the 21st century. Look that up if you have time. Ask somebody if you have time. So that's what it is, man. I had a touch on that. it's just crazy, man. So yeah, if you're a youngster, if you're feeling down, you know, we've been through it before. Your parents been through it before. Your grandparents, your uncles and aunts, they've been through it before. They know how to deal with that. They dealt with it firsthand in person. So it's no big deal to hear it on social media by bots and burner accounts. So that's my take on that, y'all. Appreciate y'all checking that one out. All right, let's move on. Something else I wanted to touch on, sports related, but not about sports, is the Tyreek Hill situation. So Tyreek Hill, Miami Dolphins player, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan, as some of you know already. First week of the season, gets pulled over, gets into, you know, crazy situation where he's pinned to the ground by the cops, and then he's all types of put in handcuffs, and then Calais Campbell comes, and he's put in handcuffs, and Jonnu Smith is at the scene, and he's being yelled at. Totally unnecessary situation, man. And it's the same kind of BS that Colin Kaepernick was kneeling for. And it keeps being repeated, just not on camera. And a lot of people are acting like, oh my God, you know, Tyree should have complied and, you know, this and that. Listen, man, anybody who's ever been pulled over, I'm a master at getting pulled over and given speeding tickets, all right? I've been pulled over way more than I would like to admit. One time on one road trip from between Tallahassee and Atlanta, I got pulled over three times in one way trip. On one part of the trip from Tallahassee to Atlanta, got pulled over three times. Not proud of it. Most recently, a couple months ago, I got pulled over coming from Orlando to Atlanta. Got pulled over super speeder. Didn't know. I knew about the state of Georgia's super speeder laws. Got pulled over in Tifton, Georgia. If you're driving in Georgia, man, don't speed in South or Central Georgia, all right? They will catch your ass 100%. So apparently the guy caught me at 88 in a 70 zone. Georgia has a super speeder law. He gave me like a $250 ticket or something like that. And in the state of Georgia, on top of that, right, a month or so later, sends me another bill for another $250. So I ended up paying like $500, something like that, for being a super speeder. But when you get pulled over for speeding, that check is the most annoying thing in the world. Like, you are annoyed when you get pulled over for speeding, man. And you're not in the greatest mood. You're not in the mood to be chummy. And some people are, because some people know, try to manipulate the cop. Most people, at least myself, right, it's just give me the damn ticket, let me go. So Tyreek wasn't probably wasn't feeling in the mood, man. It's like, okay, you got me. You know, take the driver's license, the registration, whatever you ask for, and go. And he put his window back up. And the cop, instead of going back to his car, which they usually do, once you hand over your stuff, they usually go back to the car. This guy decides to come back and instigate some BS. Oh, you got to put your window down. Oh, come on, man. Totally unnecessary. And the problem is with these cops is that at any time, right, you don't know who you're going to encounter. You don't know if you're going to encounter a nice guy or a guy who's on a power trip for no reason. White, Hispanic, black, whatever it is. You never know. So this guy escalated the situation for no reason. Like, you don't, it's not breaking the law to have your windows up. He already knew it was Tyreek Hill. It's not like Tyreek Hill, 45 minutes, 2 hours, whatever it is before the game, was going to go crazy and jeopardize himself playing in a football game. So this guy totally made a big deal out of nothing, escalated the situation. And of course, you know, Tyreek is not going to sit there and take everything, you know, sitting down, yes, sir, no, sir. So he responds in kind. It all snowballs from there. But the professional, the cop, these guys are supposed to be trained in de-escalating. They're supposed to be trained in keeping their composure. But that never seems to happen, at least on camera, with black folks. They always seem to take it up to the next level. Could Tyreek Hill have just said yes sir, no sir? Sure. But he's not required to do so, and he's not breaking the law when he does so. So it's just an unfortunate situation, man. And I wish that people who aren't black would understand the situation. And even some people who are black are saying certain things that I'm like, are you kidding? Like, you don't see school shooters get treated better than black folks getting tickets, speeding tickets? You don't see that? You don't see how even when black folks comply, like Philando Castile, still get shot up? You don't see that? So to me, it's just ridiculous, and it's a crazy and a sad situation. All I will say, here's what I will say about the Tyreek situation, man. If you're not Tyreek, it's probably best to go the no sir, yes sir route. I know it sounds bad. It sounds weak. You don't want to do it. But man, these cops are always on a power trip, and they have the weapon. And they get to shoot you and get paid vacation. So Tyreek gets pinned to the ground for no reason. You act that way, you might get shot up for no reason. So in no way I'm saying Tyreek was wrong. But what I am saying is it's better to side on go on the side of caution, to be on the side of caution, than to try to plead your case then and there. Because these fools are looking for a reason to put a cap on a black man's ass or a black woman, as we've seen. They don't care. So it's better we just take it easy. It might be, you know, they might be yelling for no reason, but it's better to take it then, because even on camera, these jokers are willing to pull some bullshit and get away with it. They get away with it. Get paid leave. Most of them don't get fired. They don't get held accountable. So I get it, Tyreek. I get it. You want to state your case. Why are you telling me to get out of the car? Why do I need to get out the car? I gave you what I needed to give you. You're supposed to go back and run the ticket. Come back, just give me my ticket. Hot as hell, probably in Miami. You know it's me. You know it's Tyreek. You already acknowledge that it's Tyreek Hill. Go write the ticket. But no, he was ready to escalate. So in those situations, young black man, black young lady, don't waste your time trying to plead your case at that moment. Let them be idiots, get the ticket, and get out alive. That's the message I'm going to tell my sons. Get out alive. Try your best to not. I try my best not to have encounters with police officers, to be honest with you. But I do get speeding tickets. But I'm going to tell my kids, hey, man, if you have an encounter with a police officer, just do what they say, man. We'll deal with it another time. Because these jokers, they're looking for a reason to act big and bad, to be the tough guy. You don't want to be the reason they get to be the hero to racists. All right? Don't give them any reason to do that. So it's a tough situation, man. Of course, you know, certain people are going to say what they want to say. Or they're going to talk about Tyreek, his history, and all this stuff. Have nothing to do with the case. Nothing to do with what's happening in front of them. It's more so, hey, he deserves it. He talked back. Oh, he did this. He did that in his past. If you're not a celebrity, it's best to just no sir, yes sir, and be on about your way. Let them take their frustration out on somebody else. All right. Let's move on, y'all. I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple weeks now, so I need to let something out. Anthony Edwards is my favorite player in the NBA, and I've talked about him in a couple episodes. I dedicated a whole episode to Anthony Edwards, man. He's fun to watch. He has an old-school mentality, two-way player. Sky's the limit for this dude. I think he has a chance to be the best player in the NBA in 2 years. Literally, Anthony Edwards, to me, has a chance to be the best player in the NBA in about 2 years. He has a chance to be a world champion soon. MVP, like, he has a chance. Like, the world is Anthony Edwards, is at his feet if he wants it, if he puts in the work. But I got to say, man, the comment Anthony Edwards made a little while ago, this brother, is Anthony Edwards seeking attention? It seems like to me Anthony Edwards has been hanging out with Noah Lyles, Adidas athlete, who didn't want to go to an Anthony Edwards party. But I feel like they must have linked up, because that comment by Anthony Edwards is one of a person who's seeking attention. Oh, I didn't really watch back then, but Michael Jordan is the only one with skill. So you didn't really watch, but Michael Jordan's the only one with skill. How does that make sense, Ant-Man? I love the guy, but how the hell does that make sense? I didn't really watch, but Michael Jordan and me was the only one with skill. And the truth is, he's not the only one of these new generation dudes, whether in the NBA or outside the NBA, who feel like the NBA just now started getting players with skill. Are you kidding? You don't know what basketball skill is. And the reason you could say that is because this generation only thinks skill is handles. And by handles, it's can I dribble 30 times and take a five-step back three? Or just three-point shooting, open three-point shooting. That's what this new generation thinks is skill now, is how many times you can dribble the ball and shoot, and can you make three-pointers? So they feel that is better than the skills that people back in the day in the 90s possessed. Meanwhile, nobody currently can hit a midi for nothing except for a couple cats. There is less than five big men who could actually put a post move together and not travel. Nobody knows how to set a pick. And by the way, that's not me saying it. NBA coaches have said current players don't know how to set picks. Setting a pick and getting someone else open on a basketball court is a skill. Knowing when to cut is a skill. Knowing when to pass the ball is a skill. A lot of people pass the ball, but they don't know when to pass the ball. They dribble too much, and by the time they pass the ball, you're out your rhythm. Happens all the time. Whether you're playing pickup ball or in the NBA, I see it all the time. You don't know when to, knowing when to pass the ball is a skill. So there were skills that people possessed back in the day that just didn't make it over right now. So when you talk about skills right now, it's not that it's more skilled. There's definitely more athleticism across the board. There's more athleticism. There is more, you know, top to bottom athletes in the league. There's still, back then, there was still the Dominique Wilkinses. There's still nobody in the current NBA doing Dominique Wilkins in-game dunks. there's still nobody doing Michael Jordan in-game stuff. There isn't. So those guys were top flight athletes. Clyde Drexler gliding through the air. But from top to bottom, the athleticism in the NBA has increased for sure. And if you want to talk about ball handling, it has increased. Part of it is because the rules allow it to now. Now you can actually dribble the ball and carry and nobody's calling anything. Carrying like this wasn't allowed back in the 90s. Go watch some tape of the 90s. You will see how dudes had to dribble. Any little thing, your hand is nearly the bottom of the ball. You were getting you're getting called for it. So the reason why you could do all these handles now is the rules allow for it. Plus, nobody can hand check you. Plus, the coaches now allow it. Coaches back then were going to sit there and watch you dribble 30 times. Your teammates wasn't going to sit there and watch you dribble 30 times and then take a step back three, a tough shot. It wasn't going to happen. You were going to get called out for it either by the coach or by your teammates. The rules wouldn't let you do all that shaking and baking because somebody was hand checking you. Or you were getting called for carry for palming the ball. All of these things which are no longer rules in the rule book in the NBA. So what's actually happened in the current NBA is not that, you know, dudes are so much more skilled, because there's, like I said, there's a lot of skills that are no longer there anymore. It's not that there's so much more skilled, is that the skills have transferred. So a lot more people are shooting threes. Why? Because the rules and the way the game is played now is you got to shoot the three ball. But none of the big men outside of like five people can actually put a post move on somebody and down low and score a bucket without traveling. Like, that is a skill as a big man to be able to use your height in the paint. That's a skill. Being able to cut at the right time and pass at the right time instead of pick and get your teammate open, like, that's a skill. So what happens today is guys are much better as ISO scorers. So that's the skill. That's what the younger generation is confusing as skill, is that dudes are a lot better as ISO scorers now. Because they could dribble and shake and shoot tough shots, they consider that better players, more skillful players. No, you have a different skill, because there's a lot more skill to basketball than ISO scoring. So despite all the dribbling and all this stuff, there is very little imagination in the guard play today. Meaning you don't see like all this fancy dribbling. There is not a single person right now who is as imaginative as somebody like Jason Williams, White Chocolate. Ain't nobody really as imaginative as a PG as a Jason Kidd. Like guys who knew how to set the table, a Steve Nash. Like these guys knew how to run the point. Even like a Chris Paul, is once he retires, like that position is extinct. Essentially, the NBA now is a bunch of wings. There's short wings and taller wings. And taller wings. Very few post players. Jokic, Embiid, Sengun in Houston, maybe AD sometimes. Very, very few post players. And very, very few PGs who actually know how to set the table. Everybody is an ISO scorer now. So now you're either a short wing or a tall wing. Short ball handler, tall ball handler. That's essentially it. Or you spot up and shoot three-pointers. There's no diversity in play anymore. So all that fancy stuff you do is all nice and good because the rules allow it. But the best player in the NBA is Nikola Jokic, the Joker, is dominating using 1980s basketball moves. Seriously, the Joker, as all the skills that people want to talk about in the NBA, and, you know, all this, the players in the 90s couldn't play currently, they don't have no skill. The best player in the NBA right now is the Joker, and he's beating up on fools using up and under moves from Kevin McHale in the 1980s. Up and unders and hook shots, soft touch around the rim. Things that big men used to be able to do that they can't do no more, but the kids nowadays are wowed by it. Because you don't see it, they don't see it anymore. Like, oh, wow. Nah, Kevin McHale was doing that 40 years ago. So that's what it is. It's ISO scoring and a lot of dribbling. And they're like, oh, that's more skillful than back in the day. No, there's way more skill to it. The mid-range jumper is essentially gone outside of a few cats in the NBA. Hardly anybody can hit a 1-2 dribble pull-up now, right? You got KD and some of these guys who can do that. Everybody's just taking step backs. But nobody can hit a mid-range jump shot. Nobody has post footwork. So you're not more skilled. You're just differently skilled. The NBA now is differently skilled. It's not more skilled. But the 90s guys could shoot threes too. If you really want to talk about it, somebody like Glenn Rice would light it up today. Glenn Rice would be a max player today with his shooting ability and scoring ability. Dennis Scott would be making hella money today getting to shoot 10 threes a game. Chris Mullin, for people who don't know Chris Mullin, Google Chris Mullin and the Golden State Warriors in the late 80s, early 90s. This brother was a nasty scorer, lefty, shot 38% from three, one of the sweetest strokes ever, straight baller. Like, Chris Mullin nowadays would be handing out easy buckets. Not only could he shoot the wide open three, but he could take you off the dribble. He could pull up, like, complete offensive game. I'm thinking of somebody like Tracy Murray, who back then was like a role player, would be like, you give Tracy Murray 10, 12 guaranteed threes a game, he's drilling them. Like, these guys were shooting 40-plus percent. Steph Curry's dad, Del Curry, is one of the best three-point shooters ever, regardless of generation. Del Curry, to me, has the quickest release in the NBA has ever seen. Like, and Del Curry was coming off his screens and shooting. Del Curry shot 40% from three for his career. If you tell Del Curry, hey, man, you get to take 10 threes a game, all you got to do is stand in the corner, it's going to be kicked out to you after a pick and roll, Del Curry might shoot 80% from threes. Like, if Del Curry played today, we'll be talking about him and Steph as the two best shooters in the league. Like, father-son combo. Del Curry shooting wide-open threes is probably, from the corner, is probably nailing, like, 8 out of 10 threes. Like, he's shooting 80%. Del Curry right now in today's NBA is the best shooter in the league, including Steph. Now, Steph is able to shoot off-platform and handle and shoot and all that stuff, but just straight up-and-down shooter, if Del Curry plays today, he is literally shooting 80%. No joke. Because, yeah, the quickest release in the game, and that junk was splash. Like, if it got kicked out to Doug Curry, you weren't recovering out to the corner. But the game was played differently back then, and Doug Curry was mainly shooting coming off screens. Screens at the top of the key, pin downs. Like, he was shooting on the run. He wasn't set. These guys nowadays think they're great three-point shooters, oh, because they can shoot a set shot. Anybody who practices enough can shoot a set shot. How do you look when you're shooting on the move, on the run? That's how Del Curry was. Bro was shooting on the run with the quickest release ever. Glenn Rice was a tremendous three-point shooter, 40% for his career. This brother was pulling up in your face off the dribble, bro. Like, Glenn Rice today is nasty. So there was plenty of three-point shooters back then. They just weren't given a chance to catch a rhythm. They could only shoot a couple of games before coach was like, you got to dump it down. That was the philosophy. It's not that they couldn't shoot. That was just the philosophy. The philosophy was play inside out. Start with the big man. He'll kick it out. You may call it inefficient basketball, but that's what it was. And it worked for some people. But analytics came and took over. And now everybody thinks they're a three-point shooter. So now it has fooled the fan into believing these guys are so much better three-point shooters. No, they're not. They're better three-point shooters because they take a lot. But they're not better shooters because back then, man, Ricky Pierce was a shooter. Like, Dale Ellis was a shooter, man. I'm not even talking about guys like point guards like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, who would light it up today with his quickness and his quick release. Mark Price would light it up today off of a pick and roll and his ability to navigate a pick and roll, split the pick and roll. Oh my God. John Stockton is killing dudes today off of a pick and roll. Can you imagine John Stockton running a pick and roll and there's no big man there? and the big man has to make a choice between guarding a lob or a three-pointer. And John Stockton's averaging like 20 assists if he plays today. He literally would. But people don't see that. They just see, oh, can you dribble 30 times and take a tough step back? That's not just skill, bro. That's just the way the game was played back then. But if you want to talk about ball handling, while these guys today all can do hezzies and crossovers and these and that are carries, take a look at ball handling back in the day. Who's a better ball handler today than Isaiah Thomas? And he was doing that without – go back and watch Isaiah Thomas film. Zeke was doing this stuff without carrying, man. He couldn't put his hand under the ball. That was carrying. There's nobody today with better handles than Tim Hardaway. The senior Tim Hardaway. Nobody today has better handles than Tim Hardaway senior. Tim Hardaway senior's UTEP two-step crossover is the nastiest crossover ever. Let me say it again. Tim Hardaway's crossover is the nastiest legal crossover ever. There's some nasty crossovers, but dudes are hella caring. Tim Hardaway's UTEP's two-step? My God. Like, that's a crossover right there. And nobody's doing that today. So Tim Hardaway would kill today. You can't touch him. And there's nobody in the paint. He is gone. Kevin Johnson is too quick. He is gone. Kevin Johnson, one of the most underrated PGs ever, had five seasons basically of 2010. Averaging 20 and 10. People forget Kevin Johnson. Too quick. Like Penny Hardaway, 90s player, career cut short because of injuries. I promise, man, this is not hyperbole. If Penny Hardaway played today, he's probably the best PG in the league, all right? Tall, athletic, handle. He can post up. He can shoot. He has the vision, and he's a willing passer. There was nothing on the offensive end Penny couldn't do. Penny Hardaway plays today, 90s player, unskilled player. Penny Hardaway is playing today. Penny Hardaway is the best PG in the league. There is nothing on the basketball court Penny Hardaway couldn't do. And people like playing with him because he didn't need to take 30 dribbles and tough step backs. Like, you want to play with Penny because if you move, he got you to rock. That's why Shaq loved this guy. And his step back is one of the original step back. Penny's step back is one of the nastiest moves ever. I'm telling y'all, Penny Hardaway plays today. He's the best PG in the league. You could throw out whatever name you want. Whatever, Luka included. Throw out whatever name you want. Penny is playing today. Big, tall guard with handles, with vision, with a shot, with quickness and speed. This brother is literally putting on a highlight show. He's a max player. And he's the best player in the league. But nah, they didn't have skill in the 90s at all. There was no skill in the 90s. So here's what's happened, yo. I talked about the fact that, you know, there's been a skill exchange. The skill has exchanged, right? It's gone from post play and moving without the ball and all these things to the skill has been exchanged to ISO scoring. So people think that ISO scores are more skill. No, they're just ISO scores. There's more to basketball than ISO scoring. And then there's the three-point shooting. And I'm wondering, you know, do people know there's such thing as functional basketball? Meaning, as a big man, every big man now, you know, wants to be a three-point shooter. Oh, you got to be a three-point shooter. And Carl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards' his teammate, Carl Anthony Towns is like, yeah, he's the best shooting three. Best three-point shooting big man ever. But is that beneficial to winning 5-on-5 basketball? Let me ask you this. Stay with me now. Carl Anthony Towns, self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man ever. Where was that when the team needed you against the Dallas Mavericks? Did they need your three-point shot? Or did they need you in the down low getting buckets, banging down low and moving dudes out the way? So this is the part about basketball that the youngsters miss. And because everybody can shoot threes and all the big men are shooting threes, they assume they're better basketball players. No, there's functional basketball and there's winning basketball. Is the skill that you have actually helping your team win? As a big man, is you shooting threes actually helping you win? Or is it more beneficial to your team if you can actually go down low and move some dudes out of the way? Example. Patrick Ewing is probably somebody young kids will look at today and say, Patrick Ewing wasn't that skilled. Patrick Ewing didn't shoot threes. He probably has less than 10 three-point shots made in his career. Patrick Ewing didn't have handles. But I promise you, if Patrick Ewing played for the Minnesota Timberwolves this year's playoffs, they're beating the Dallas Mavericks. Because what the Timberwolves needed in that Dallas Mavericks series was not the greatest big man three-point shooting ever in Karl Anthony Towns. What they actually needed was somebody who could move into the paint and move some people out the way and dunk on some people and get some people in foul trouble. That's what they needed. So while Karl Anthony Towns is a great three-point shooter, he was being guarded in the paint by somebody like PJ Washington. And he was guarded in the paint by a stick figure in Derek Lively. And Daniel Gaffer. Like, if Patrick Ewing played for the Minnesota Timberwolves, he's not shooting threes. He's getting in the paint, and he's fouling them all out. Jason Kidd knows if somebody like Patrick Ewing is playing in the NBA right now and he's on the Minnesota Timberwolves, he can't guard him with P.J. Washington. That matchup is obsolete, bro. P.J. Washington is getting put into the rim. He's falling out. But Patrick Ewing, by today's standard, is considered unskilled because he's not shooting threes and he's not doing million combo hezzies. That's functional basketball. Functional basketball is a big man who knows how to use his weight in the paint. So Patrick Ewing is not out there shooting threes. He's not being guarded and stopped by P.J. Washington in the playoffs. So Anthony Edwards, if Patrick Ewing, one of the unskilled guys from the 90s, is on your team, you probably have a ring on your finger right now. Because he's absolutely bodying P.J. Washington. And he's putting Derek Lively into the rim. Like, these guys are too small. They're falling out. In the NBA, another thing about post play, which the new generation doesn't understand, post play causes foul trouble. So if somebody who actually knows how to play in the paint, a big man who actually knows how to use his size, would have fouled out, would have gotten the whole Dallas Mavericks front line in foul trouble. But no, you're stuck with Karl Anthony Towns, the greatest big man three-point shooter ever, according to him, and Rudy, who is useless on the offensive end. But the youngsters don't think like that. All they think about is, who can handle real nice and shoot tray balls? There are different parts of basketball, and there are different needs on a basketball court. So just because guys can shoot pre-programmed three-pointers because that's all they've been practicing in the gym with their trainer forever doesn't mean they're better basketball players. The Houston Rockets lost a chance at a championship. The Houston Rockets should have been a world championship, but they were just robots. They were pre-programmed to just shoot threes. Yeah, you could say they're better three-point shooters than previous generations, but they're pre-programmed three-point shooters, and they're pre-programmed players. When those 27 straight threes were falling, nobody had the ability or the sense to do something else. So you lost your chance at a championship because everybody was so skilled at three-point shooting, but then you had to do nothing else on the court. That's what I mean by functional basketball. Functional basketball is not just having a skill that you practice in the gym with your trainer. It's actually being able to use a skill or a combination of skills to win a game. And too many guys in today's game, they have pre-programmed skills. They have to take a certain number of dribbles in order to get their shot off. They have to take a tough step back to get a shot off, even though the lane may be open or midi may be open, which is a regular pull-up. It's pre-programmed. So, yeah, the Houston Rockets cost themselves a championship because they were pre-programmed. Yeah, they're probably the a much better three-point shooting team than any team of the 90s and any team of the 80s. But when 27 straight threes couldn't go in, nobody had the ability or the sense to do anything else. That's because you're pre-programmed, Mr. Skilled Three-Point Shooter. There's more to basketball than dribbling the ball 100 times and taking three-pointers. So, yeah, Mr. Anthony Edwards, if you had Patrick Ewing on your team or somebody like Patrick Ewing on your team, even if they couldn't shoot three-pointers, you're probably a champion because there's nobody on the Dallas Mavericks who could hang down low with a Patrick Ewing. He's too big for them. And there's definitely nobody on the Boston Celtics who could hang down low with a Patrick Ewing. He's fouling out Al Horford. He's too light. He's fouling out skinny-ass Porzingis. They're too light. And now you, Anthony Edwards, is being guarded by somebody who can't touch you, or they're going to blow the whistle, and you're going to the free throw line with like 10 minutes left in the quarter. With 8 minutes left in the quarter, the team is in foul trouble because somebody like Patrick Ewing done got everybody in foul trouble. That's how it works, man. Functional basketball. So your man's is out here being a great three-point shooter. Nothing wrong with being a big man who can shoot. But if you're a big man who can shoot and can't use your size in the paint, and somebody who's 20, 30 pounds less than you can handle you in the paint, that's a problem. And that's what happened with the Minnesota Timberwolves. So Ant-Man, maybe you need to find somebody without skills, who can actually go down low and get you some buckets. File some people out for you. Make it easy for you to drive into the paint. This is a fun conversation, man. So yeah. So here's another thing. I can go on for days on this topic. And listen, I said I was done with this conversation several episodes ago, but Ant-Man brought me back in, and because he did, I have to respond. My favorite player in the league said something ridiculous, and I have to respond. Another thing that came out of this thing, as people are going around saying, oh, 90s had no skill, only Jordan had no skill, so therefore Michael Jordan had no competition. You youngsters, go look up these guys. Go look up Clyde Drexler and tell me who today is stopping from Clyde Drexler from doing what he does. Go look up Joe Dumars and his stats. Strong, pit bull, shooter. Go look up Joe Dumars. Go look up Ron Harper and his athleticism. Go look up Latrell Sprewell, his quickness, his athleticism, his strength. These guys weren't three-point shooters at all. Well, Joe Dumars was. But they would hand out buckets. Say, who would stop these guys today? Like, Latrell Sprewell was nasty, man. Ron Harper was nasty. Like, people think of the Chicago Bulls Ron Harper after the injury. Nah, pre-injury Ron Harper, like, was one of the best two guards the game has ever seen, man. I'm talking about all time. The brother was sick, in your face. Like, Mitch Richmond was a pit bull, man. He was too damn strong. He had the J work, the post work, the handles. Like, Mitch Richmond today is probably a max player, a max wing player. Because he's averaging 25 easy. Like, it's easy. Easy work, easy money. Allen Houston, one of the sweetest strokes ever. Like, Allen Houston was just a bucket getter, bro. You talk about Grant Hill, like one of the most athletic cats the game has ever seen. Grant Hill's first step on the wing, I don't think that's been replicated since. He didn't have to combo and hezzy and through the leg, back through the leg 30 times. Grant Hill was one step and gone. Like, all of these guys were in Michael Jordan's era, and despite all that, Michael Jordan reigned supreme. Why? Because he was just that dude. And people want to claim, oh, if Michael Jordan played today, well, he wouldn't dominate like he does today. Because it's a way more athletic league today. If Michael Jordan played today, he wouldn't be able to dominate because everybody else is just as athletic. Really? Pete Michael Jordan, wouldn't be dominant today because everybody else is athletic. Really? Meanwhile, the best player in the league is a big fat guy who looks like he's out of shape and out of breath. A 7-foot center, Nikola Jokic, using old school 1980s moves. The second best player is another fat guy who doesn't look out of shape, who is out of shape, who has no desire to play defense. No athleticism in his body. Second best player, Luka. Third best player is probably Embiid, you would say. Embiid, who every time he jumps, his knee cracks. That Embiid? Nah, Jordan couldn't dominate in this league. Fourth best player is Giannis. Giannis, who drives in a straight line, has zero wiggle to his game. Straight line and dunk. Fourth best player, Giannis. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who really plays a 1990s game in terms of his mid-range game. Only difference is he gets to dribble the hell out the ball for 20 seconds on the shot clock. Nah, Jordan couldn't dominate, but Shai can. Jordan couldn't dominate. Jason Tatum is one of the best players in the league, but Michael Jordan, peak athletic, Michael Jordan couldn't handle these guys. Nah, they're too athletic. Jason Tatum has average athleticism. Shai has average athleticism. Nah, Anthony Edwards is like the 7th, 8th best player in the league. Jordan couldn't dominate. Look at Anthony Edwards. Jordan couldn't dominate. Look at Bron. 50-year-old Bron. Jordan couldn't dominate. Look at KD. 45-year-old KD. Probably the 9th, 10th best player in the league right now. Steph. All these guys ready for retirement. So you're going to sit here and tell me that Michael Jordan, peak Michael Jordan, flying through the air Michael Jordan, hang time Michael Jordan, that Michael Jordan palming the ball, switching hands in the air Michael Jordan, pull-up game Michael Jordan, automatic pull-up game Michael Jordan, not even fadeaway Michael Jordan, peak athletics Michael Jordan, could not dominate in a league where the best player is a fat center using old school moves. The second best player is a fat guy who's not in shape, who has no desire to be in shape. The third best player is a guy who, whenever he jumps, his knee cracks. The fourth best player is a guy who drives in a straight line, hella athletic, but drives straight line, one speed, no wiggle. Another guy, best player, maybe 5th, 6th best player in SGA, who essentially plays a 90s game. Tatum has average athleticism. Ant-Man, great athlete, but nowhere near peak Jordan athletics. Bron, athlete, but way past his prime, ready to retire. So is KD. KD's game is essentially a 90s game if you take away the fact that he's tall as hell, 7 feet tall, got handles, and shoot threes. But his game is so fundamentally sound. KD is the foundation of KD's game is 1990s. It's head fake, one dribble, two dribble, pull up, J work. KD ain't out here doing all these, I'm going to dribble for 24 seconds and then shoot the ball. He ain't that type of player. That's what made him so special in the Olympics. And that's why, segue, all of the players who got the most tick in the Olympics were guys who played that way. They were able to shoot Devin Booker. They were able to shoot and pass and play as a team. They didn't need 20 seconds to dribble. You want to talk about functional basketball? The Olympics is a perfect picture of functional basketball. Because while guys in the NBA get to dribble for 20 seconds and then shoot, you couldn't do that in the Olympics. The rules wouldn't let you to do that. Guys could play defense. The court was smaller. So all the guys for the U.S. Olympic team who got heavy minutes in the Olympics were guys who actually played a 1990s-style basketball. So LeBron and KD are old-school players, and Steph is an old-school player at heart. He just makes ridiculous shots, but he's fundamental as hell. Devin Booker is a 1990s player. He just happened to have a smooth stroke. But Devin Booker is a catch-and-shoot, 1-2 dribble pull-up player. He ain't doing all that messing around. All the guys who got heavy minutes were 1990s old-school type players who knew how to play without the ball, who could cut, who could set picks, who had high IQ. So before you go about disparaging 1990s players, think about that. But back to my list. So you're trying to tell me prime Michael Jordan couldn't play with these guys? Prime Michael Jordan Prime Michael Jordan stands no chance in a league where the best player is Fat Jokic, second best player is Fat Luka, Embiid, whose knees cracking all the time, Giannis, who's a straight line driver, Shea, who's essentially a 90s player but regular athleticism, Tatum has average athleticism, and elite athlete but nowhere close to Jordan level athlete, Bron, who's on his way out the door, old man Bron, KD on his way out the door, but whose game is a fundamental 90s style game, and Steph, who's just an anomaly, right? Steph, LeBron, KD, all those guys are unicorns. They're anomalies, but they're also old. But you're telling me prime Jordan couldn't hang 30 in this environment, in this league, because cats are so athletic? No. That'll be a negative. Learn basketball. So yeah, man, I don't know what the hell got into Ant-Man. I appreciate him because that's a topic of conversation, of course. But yo, are you kidding? Of course there were skilled players back in the day. The skill has changed. There's a lot more athletes now, for sure, much more athletes, and a lot more three-point shooters. Because the rules say so and the game dictates that there be. But it's more so that the skills have been exchanged. Not that they're more skilled. The skills have been exchanged. You traded out paint, footwork for standstill three-point shooting. You traded out passing and kicking and moving without the ball and setting screens. You traded that out for ISO scoring. That's really what it's been. Just an exchange of skill. That doesn't make one better than the other. Youngsters, get that through your heads. Learn basketball. All right, last thing before I get up out of here. NFL's back. Woohoo! NFL's back. First week one went by. Man, football is just crazy. Honestly, I'm going to be honest here. I didn't watch any preseason this year, y'all. I don't know if it's because the Olympics came on, but I had no desire to watch the preseason. Like, I didn't know the preseason was going on half the time. Usually I'm like, man, I need something to watch. I'm missing football, but I didn't miss football at all until the regular season started. I'm like, damn, I missed this stuff. But football's back. College football, my Seminoles are 0-2. Our quarterback sucks, so my college football season is basically over, unfortunately. Damn, we made a mistake. So I'm not going to be talking much about college football, except for the Colorado Buffaloes, maybe, if there's something to talk about there. Of course, they're going to be talking about their overhype, Deion effect. I talked about them last season. Until I see something really special to talk about, I'm probably going to leave them alone. But the NFL, all right? Let's get to the NFL. The NFL, to me, so what I wanted to talk about really with the NFL is the QBs, right? There are some QBs under some serious pressure this year, all right? Guys are getting fat contracts, and I said it before, man, the contracts for quarterbacks nowadays is stupendous, and a lot of guys are getting paid that I don't think, listen, I want everybody to get paid and make a lot of money, especially football players for the harm they put themselves under, okay? But dang it, man, are you going to sit here and tell me that all these guys deserve so much money as quarterbacks while the running backs who may be better, New York Giants, since letting Saquon go because they prefer to pay Daniel Jones, and now Daniel Jones has proven to be a bum? Sorry, man. And Saquon is balling with the Eagles. So here's what I want to talk about for football for this week. There are some quarterbacks who are on some serious pressure to perform, in my opinion, all right? A lot of guys who have performed well in the regular season and put up some numbers, but now it's kind of put up or shut up time. So here are some quarterbacks. It's like put up or shut up time, all right? Very first on that list, and I hate to say it, very first on my put up or shut up list is Lamar, man. Lamar is getting, I hate to say it, Lamar is probably going to have this James Harden label around his neck. Great regular season, and then come playoffs, it don't look as good. I know it's a team game. I'm not saying Lamar has to win a Super Bowl, but he has to look better in the playoffs. People are going to say, well, what about Josh Allen? He hasn't won nothing. Josh Allen has actually looked good in the playoffs. He was 13 seconds away. His defense couldn't hold. 13 seconds away. So Josh Allen has had some dominant playoff performances. He's had some poor ones as well. But he's had some dominant playoff performances that his team should have won the game, but he didn't win. So Josh Allen, to me, has proven himself to me a pretty good playoff performer. But Lamar, man, he's unstoppable in the regular season, but come playoff time, it's ooh and ah. And we can't make any more excuses for Lamar, man. I love the guy. Rooting for him. Whew. Lamar, number one under the gun, under the most pressure, under the microscope, whatever you want to say, Lamar number one. Number two quarterback under the most pressure. My favorite team, Miami Dolphins quarterback, Tua. Tua Tagovailoa. Tua is under the under a lot of pressure because he has to show that he can lead the Dolphins to a win against a good team when things aren't going great. When Tyreek is not getting open all the time. Like, he has to show he can win a tough game against a good team. Last year, the Dolphins couldn't beat a good team to save their life. And oftentimes, Tua struggled. So Tua just got paid a hell of a lot of money. Happy for dude. Tua's going to have to show that he deserves all that money, that he's actually a franchise quarterback and not just riding the coattails of a great offense. So can Tua win some tough games against some of the better teams in the league when the defenses are beating down his neck, when Tyreek is not running buck booty open? Can you do that for a brother? Little penny voice, can you do that for a brother? So Tua is under the gun. Tua is under the second most pressure to me in the league right now to perform up to that contract. Justin Herbert is under pressure. I don't care what nobody say. Justin Herbert has gotten a pass. He keeps getting put in these top five lists. He keeps getting called elite. And he's won Jack Jackson. Justin Herbert has won absolutely nothing. But all we hear is excuses and people calling him elite still. All I know is that for the last several years, it's been said and repeated that in order, elite quarterbacks are able to carry teams. Elite quarterbacks are able to win despite their coaches, despite bad defenses, despite their weapons. Elite quarterbacks are able to carry teams. And so far, all we've made is excuses for Justin Herbert. So yeah, Justin Herbert is under pressure to me to perform up to that contract. Because so far, all we've had is excuses. Oh, Anthony Lynn is a bad coach. He caught some games. And all his coaches haven't been ready for prime time. Coach after coach has gotten blamed, and now he has Jim Harbaugh. So what happens if Justin Herbert doesn't win with Jim Harbaugh? What's probably going to happen is that Justin Herbert's going to win a lot of games with Jim Harbaugh, but his stats are going to suffer. So is he still elite? Is Justin Herbert going to still be elite if he wins a ton of games, wins playoff games, but he doesn't look the same as a guy putting up 4,000, 4,500-yard seasons? Throwing 80-yard touchdown passes? But so far, Justin Herbert's been given a pass, people calling him elite. He's in people's top three, top five lists, and he's done nothing as far as win-loss record. So Justin Herbert is my third most under the gun player, quarterback. Fourth under the gun. I might get some flack for this. Joe Burrow, man. Joe Burrow. I've said it before, I've said it again. Joe Burrow has put up a lot of stats. He had a pretty good run to take his team to the Super Bowl, and I like the guy. And he gets put in places where I don't know he should have been yet. And Joe Burrow is, to me, right, my number fourth most under pressure quarterback, Joe Burrow. He's under pressure because he has great weapons. But yet, it's like sometimes when those weapons, like week one, weapons weren't there, he looked god-awful. Right? Well, all the weapons weren't there. He didn't look good at all. So I feel like Joe Burrow has gotten a pass, right? He has a swag and he does some things. But listen, man, and I've seen people say this online, Joe Burrow needs his guys on the field to look like Joe Burrow. When they're not there, it's different. He looks different. He's not like some of these other guys. He's not like Lamar. He's not like Pat, obviously. And he's not like somebody like Josh, right? When they don't have all the weapons, they could still do some things. Joe Burrow needs his guys there. So I think Joe Burrow's under pressure to perform. T. Higgins is injured. Like, I don't know, man. Was that run fluky? I mean, it kind of was to the Super Bowl, really. Because the Titans choked that game away where they were the favorite at home. The Titans should have won that game. Like, that elevated Joe Burrow's profile. I like the guy. But is Joe Burrow really top five? I think Joe Burrow is under pressure this year to perform. You got to show that, hey, man, that year wasn't a fluke. It wasn't, oh, we were lucky because the Titans choked. Like, no, we can do this. Yeah, Joe Burrow is under pressure for me. Jalen Hurts, same reason as Joe Burrow. Jalen Hurts has had a magical run to the Super Bowl, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it again. I think the Eagles' Super Bowl window has closed. And as these linemen start to get older and teams start to figure them out, I don't know if Jalen Hurts can beat people from the pocket, man. Jalen Hurts hasn't proven to me that he can consistently win as a quarterback from the pocket. People want to call Lamar a running back. I think Jalen is more of a running back, not to be disrespectful, than Lamar. Jalen Hurts hasn't proven to me to be able to win his O-line and giving them 10 seconds to be able to pick people apart. And last year, they kind of went out sad. So to me, Jalen Hurts is under pressure because he's getting paid hella bucks. And then week one, he didn't look that great, despite the fact having some okay stats. He didn't look that great. So I still don't trust Jalen, nice kid. I still don't trust Jalen as a quarterback who's going to sit back there when his pocket ain't clean to sit back there and pick people apart. He wants to take off and run. So I think he's under pressure to kind of show what he's got, to show that he can be a truly elite QB and not a running back, end quotes. Can you believe that? People are going to say, wow. People are going to say, you're crazy, man. Jalen Hurts went to a Super Bowl. Nah, man. Some of those things are team accomplishments. Like, the team around him is stacked. But somehow, I feel like Jalen Hurts holds them back. So Jalen Hurts is going to have to prove to me, a nobody, that he can be a QB and not a runner. So those are my five quarterbacks. Top five quarterbacks who are under the most pressure to me this year. Lamar has to show that he can do something in the playoffs. Tua has to show something that he can do something when Tyreek Hill ain't wide open against good defenses, against good teams. Justin Herbert actually has to win games now and stop just putting up stats and getting put in top five conversation based off of stats. Joe Burrow, he's going to have to come back and show why he's been put in top five conversations after his second year. And Jalen Hurts has to show that he can actually be a QB and win games from the pocket consistently. Top five quarterbacks under pressure. What do y'all think? Take that for data. Who said that again? Take that for data. Oh, man. Good times. Good times. Well, I appreciate y'all hanging out. Happy to be back with y'all. Happy to be back talking about football. Now that the season's here, episodes will be coming more quickly. But I'm still looking. I'm going to have guests, y'all. Guests are coming. Trust me on this. Guests are coming. We're going to talk about sports sometimes. Sometimes we may not talk about sports, but I hope you guys join me anyway. I hope you guys follow along. We're going to have some good conversation, man, about some important stuff. I think, you know, we things that we should know, things that will be beneficial, right? Football is a distraction. Football is a distraction. Sports is a distraction. But there's real life things happening and there's real life opportunities that I want us to take advantage of. I don't want my followers to just be sports fans. I want you to learn something when you follow this channel. All right? Cool. Bet. So I'm going to leave it here, y'all. Thanks for watching as always. Love y'all. Let me know what y'all think. Leave your feedback. Don't forget to tell your friends, family, loved ones. Check it out. But I'll catch you guys next time. Mike, Sports in the Real shit. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.